Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I think we're going to get the program started. My name is Armin Afsahi. I'm with the UCSD Alumni Association, and on behalf of Chancellor Fox, it is my pleasure to welcome you to today's program. This, as you know, is part of our 50th anniversary celebration signature programs, and the Ideas Week is a series of lectures and symposia that's taking place this week. It started yesterday at lunchtime in this very room, and will continue on up until tomorrow night. We'll talk a little bit at the end of the program about further information on that, but I'm so glad to see so many of you here to participate in today's session. UCSD, as most of us who've been marveling at it for years know, itself started with an idea. It started with an idea that Roger Revelle and Walter Monk had over 50 years ago about building a campus that would rise in a meteoric fashion and really become the envy of the world in its promise in higher education and research and in public service. And today's program is going to focus on the seed that really has been UCSD and the model that has proved around the globe, and that's education. It's a great opportunity for us to talk about issues in education and hearing about some of our thought leaders, because as you know, the very promise of education, especially higher public education, is at risk in California and in the rest of the country. So as advocates, as community members, as students, as alumni, I think we all have an obligation to really become well-versed and understood about the issues that we're facing so we can go and talk to our elected officials, to our friends, to our families, and ask them to help participate in this process that we call advocacy. Because education is the most important thing that any community does. And as you hear from our fantastic speakers today and our inspirational students, I think you'll see that there's great promise there. So we want to keep that flame going around ideas, and that's really the theme around today. So it's with that sentiment that I again welcome you and thank you for being here. My role is to moderate the session, so I'm going to be introducing our speakers that will come up and make a brief presentation about their programs, and they'll outline some issues for you all. And at the end of it, we'll all come up and be available for Q&A, and students will also be joining us. So what I encourage you to do is to think about some of the questions that you may want to ask. I don't know if you have things to jot them down on, but we're all UCSD community members, so remember your questions, but we'll have a great opportunity to engage in some exchange around those ideas. So keep your questions in mind as they come up during the presentations. So at first, it's my great honor to introduce what we call in the alumni business a trifecta, and that's Dr. Luz Chung. She is a triple alum from UCSD, received her bachelor's, her master's, and her EDD here, so hence trifecta. Dr. Chung is she's on faculty at the Education Studies program here at UCSD. She's also worked in the San Diego Unified School District as a bilingual classroom and Title I resource teacher at Memorial Academy and a vice president at Wilson Academy. She's served as director of education at UC San Diego Extension, where she coordinated professional development programs for our teachers. So please help me welcome Dr. Chung. And as she's coming up there, before you do your applause, she's going to be joined by three of our UCSD students. They're all class of 2011, so they're soon to go out and change the world. And joining Luz will be Victor Lin, Lisa Tichan Arong, and Christina Zepeda. So please welcome them to the board.
Thank you. Well, good afternoon. Well, we feel very privileged to be here this afternoon and to have the opportunity to talk about social justice issues in education. And we're going to be talking about these issues through the lens of a service learning program that we offer here at UC San Diego through the Education Studies program. My name is Luz Chung, and I'm on the Faculty of the Education Studies program here at UCSD. But I would also like for my students to introduce themselves. They're going to tell you a little bit about themselves and their majors.
Hello, everyone. My name is Victor Lin. I am a political science major minoring in education studies.
Hello, everyone. My name is Lisa DeChonrong. I'm a fourth-year senior here studying communications with a minor in psychology and education.
Hi, I'm Christina Zepeda. I'm majoring in psychology and minoring in education studies.
Well, thank you. We are going to be talking to you today about a program called Partners at Learning, or PAL, which is the service learning program that we offer through education studies here at UC San Diego. And this is a program that places undergraduate UCSD students as mentors and tutors in low-income, underprivileged, and underserved pre-K through 12 schools and communities. And we, in particular, want to talk to you about the social justice approach that we take in framing the way in which we plan and implement the program. But before we talk about our program, we wanted to sort of give you some context about this idea of social justice. Social justice, as we all know, is a concept that can be quite abstract, right? But it is a concept that is also very applicable to a variety of settings and fields. And for example, Rigoberta Menchú, who is the Nobel Peace Prize winner of 1992, talks about social justice within the context of the years of oppression that the indigenous people in Guatemala had suffered for many generations. So some might say, well, Rigoberta Menchú's words are beautiful, but they might not necessarily apply to the local context of education. We would argue the opposite. We believe that her words are very applicable to today's educational context, especially when we think about the many challenges and struggles that many of our most underserved and underprivileged families and communities face on a daily basis, as well as the many struggles and challenges that many of our most underprivileged and underserved students face in the school system as a result of systemic systems of oppression and injustice, and also because of inequitable access to educational opportunities. Therefore, we agree with Applebaum's definition of social justice education, where we don't view social justice education as a simple band-aid approach that serves to simply recognize diversity and then maybe use the band-aid to fix or to address instances of maybe hatred or prejudice. We really view social justice education as a way to help our students think critically about real issues, about issues of inequality, of marginalization, and of oppression. And we really want our students to also enact their sense of agency by affecting change through their work as mentors and tutors. Therefore, the theoretical framework that we use to construct our courses really is based on a critical pedagogy approach to education. And this is a critical approach to education that questions what is known as the deficit lens or the deficit views of low-income, underrepresented communities. And the deficit view is one that blames the community for their destiny, right, for the problems that they might have. And is also one that is unfortunately used to justify and to even excuse the underachievement of students. And it is one that we contest because it is one that really does not solve any problems or moves any agendas forward, but rather than one that perpetuates stereotypes and generalizations about these communities. So we do question that deficit lens. And in addition, we want our students, again, to be fully engaged as social actors in change. We are also very aware that education is tightly connected to educational policies as well as educational practices. And these policies and practices have been instrumental in how the conversations or the discourse about the achievement gap have been shaped throughout the years. And it is something that we hear a lot all the time. And in our classes, through our education studies classes, we talk about these issues and we think critically about them as well. And one of the biggest lessons that we teach our students, the students who are in our program, is to really know who their community, the communities that they're serving, to really understand the schools, and most importantly, to really know who their students are. And it is really important that they learn to affirm their students' identities, and at the same time to understand the diversity and the different experiences that these students bring to the table. And because we serve a large population of English learners in our schools, we also talk about our students about the rights of linguistic minority children in our system. So in our classes, we ask our students to think critically. We ask a lot of questions. We do a lot of problem posing. And Victor is going to talk to you about some of the questions that we raise with our students.
So basically, we ask, who are the students that we serve through the Partners at Learning program? In what ways does the education system serve them? And in what ways does the education system oppress them? And what can we do to promote equity and social justice in all of our schools and communities across the nation? So as you can see here, this slide gives you, I guess, some statistics on the current composition of students by ethnic breakdown in terms of the amount of AP and IB courses that they take in high school. So as you can see, there seems to be already a sort of disparity between students of color, especially historically underrepresented students of color, who take, I guess, zero courses, as you can see on this graph, compared to their white and Asian American counterparts. It's quite startling to see that this isn't just, you know, it's their environment, or it's, you know, they just come from a sort of, I guess, lazy culture or something like that. In fact, I argue that it stems from societal inequalities that get reproduced within our education system here, especially in San Diego. So in terms of A through G access, for those of you who don't know who A through G or what A through G is, the A through G requirements are necessary to get into a UC. I believe a lot of schools in California have especially implemented them. And I know in San Diego especially, the school board recently decided to implement A through G requirements for all their students. But as you can see that the A through G requirements, while attempting to hold students to a higher standard, not necessarily are able to, or not every student is able to meet those standards per se. As you can see, special education and learning disadvantaged students are not essentially, they don't have the means to fulfill those requirements. Thus, they, I guess, are left behind in a sense, especially when it comes to achieving and obtaining higher education within the UC system and the Cal State system in California. So we'll be examining some demographic data. And this, as you can see, is the amount of students enrolled within K through 12 in San Diego County. And as you can see, Hispanics do constitute a large portion of the amount of students that we have in our schools here in San Diego. And if you look at the next slide over, you'll see that they hardly make up a significant proportion within higher education, especially within the University of California. And as I was mentioning earlier, how there is this sort of disparity between the amount of accessibility that is afforded to students, you can see that higher education seems to favor certain ethnic backgrounds over others, especially here at the University of California, San Diego, where you literally have 0.3% Native Americans and 1.3 African American students here. The chart didn't account for that. My apologies. But essentially, that's what you have. And that essentially speaks volumes about how we are underserving and not exactly delivering on our promise of equal education for all, especially within San Diego.
So now I just want to talk to you guys a little bit about the way that our courses are laid out. The way that we basically distinguish our courses from, you know, the other opportunities that students have to serve their communities is that we are a service learning program. And so the idea basically is that we not only give students the opportunity to go out into the community and serve their community, but then there's also this whole academic framework that we support them with. A lot of our classes, you take we'll explain it later, but there are 130 classes, 131 classes. So these are different classes that you can take where you're working with different populations of students, but then there's always a 139 practicum component that we require our students to also enroll in, which allows them to actually go into the community and test out the things that they're actually learning about inside the classes. So our Partners at Learning program overview. As I mentioned already, the courses that we're going to be talking about today are service learning branch, a part of the service learning branch of our UCSD Education Studies program. So the Education Studies program is actually open, these classes are open up to all of the students. So we have, over 500 UCSD students that take our PAL classes each year. And what's interesting about this is that it's not limited to students who are only interested in education. Our PAL classes are offered to students that are looking to make a difference in their community. And so we get biochemistry students, or we get engineering students, all students that are given this opportunity to actually explore issues of education within our university. We also contribute to about 24,000 hours of mentoring and tutoring to low-income neighborhood schools throughout the county. And so, once again, this is afforded by the fact that we have over 500 students that are taking our class per year that are actually serving their community about 40 hours throughout the quarter. So some of our PAL goals is to provide college role models and academic support to underrepresented pre-K through 12 schools and students, to increase the university presence and resources in traditionally underrepresented communities, to engage UCSD students in meaningful coursework and fieldwork that contribute to their sense of citizenry and community involvement, and to encourage more talented and motivated young adults to care about and become more involved in education issues. So I just want to talk a little bit about our approach. The first is that it's a process of increased engagement and awareness. So the idea is that, you know, a lot of our classes that are offered at UCSD, a lot of times the idea is that, you know, you come to a lecture and the professor's lecturing and you're just supposed to retain all this information. You're not really allowed a lot of flexibility in being able to think about the issues that you're learning about. But the idea with our class is that students come in and they're challenged to actually think critically about the information that we're presenting them. The cool thing about this too is that they're actually being able to go out into the field and they actually get to test out these theories that we're teaching them about, and they get to critically examine for themselves whether these issues are really important or, you know, ways that we can problem solve. And so the academic and service components really go hand in hand. And I think that this is like one of the most important things about our program is that, you know, students are coming into our lectures, they're coming into our sections, and they're learning about what they're doing, and then they actually get to go out into the field and they get to test out what they're doing. So the way that our courses are designed is that there are journals. The journals are a way for the students to process the readings that they're reading, the things that they're experiencing in lecture, and then tie it back into the practice that they're actually doing at the school sites. Our different assignments are structured so that, you know, they're not just typical, like you come into a classroom for a test. The midterms and the finals are all designed so that they directly tie back into the experiences that the students are having. It's a heavy, intensive writing course as well. And the cool thing about this, too, is that the students get to talk to each other. And so in lecture and in section, we encourage a lot of partner and small group talk because we agree that the best ideas are often come up in these social learning environments where students are actually being able to talk to each other and share their experiences. And then a call for action. So it's making connections between the academic course content, the practical experience, and students' current and future roles in society. So these are some of the PAL classes that we actually offer. And I'm actually going to invite my other two peers to come up and talk to you guys about this. So there's the 131, which is the preschool tutoring. This is a class where students are allowed to, they're assigned a specific preschool teacher, and they work with an entire class. So they're tutoring kids ages 3 to 5. The 130 is a mentoring class. So instead of actually being placed in, they are still placed in a classroom, but they're assigned one or two students that they really want to get to know holistically. So it's not just getting to know the student inside the classroom, but we encourage them to take the student out for about, you know, 10 hours per quarter to really get to know the student's family, their background, their community. This is the idea that we're really encouraging them to holistically get to know the student. For the 136, did you want to?
Yeah.
For the 136, you work with high school or middle schools, and you work for 40 hours throughout the whole quarter, and basically you're the tutor. So when you go into the school, you tell them what specific areas you're good at. So if I was good at math, they would place me in an algebra or geometry class, and for the whole quarter, I would work with that class and at the end do a project. And then for the 137, you also work with a school in a specific classroom, and you work on an art project with the students throughout the quarter.
As for the 138, it involves working at a charter school within San Diego Unified. I personally worked at the Proy School, which is one of our amazing partner schools that we work with, and it's very similar to the 136 course, but instead it's more of an emphasis on the charter school movement and how it came about in the United States.
And then, as previously mentioned, the 139, students usually, when they sign up for the 130, the 130, or the 131 through the 138s, they also have to sign up for the 139, which, as we mentioned, is the practicum component.
Okay, and it's through these courses that we're able to serve 40-plus schools throughout San Diego County, as far north as Oceanside, as far south as National City, and as far east as El Cajon. Each of these schools come from low-income neighborhoods where we're able to assist underserved and underrepresented students and a large population of English language learners. Thus, a wide diversity of students are able to be a part of this program. Okay, and then here's some of our partner schools. There's Garfield Continuation High School, which is a school designed to help credit-deficient students. And then there's Crawford High School, which is a small school model where there's four high schools with four separate themes on one campus. There's Kip Adelante Charter School, which buses in students from Southeast San Diego. There's Cadman Elementary School, which is a magnet school, which also buses in students all over San Diego. Then there's Eje Elementary School, which is a dual immersion language program with Spanish and English. And then there's Choice Mead Elementary School, which is a newly renovated school in San Diego. Now, what is it about these courses that attracts UCSD students? Some of the examples are experience working with children and youth of a diverse background, learn about schools and education and society, fulfill a graduation requirement, get a minor in education studies, and lastly, engage in meaningful coursework and fieldwork that contribute to a more equitable society and world. Personally, I took these classes my first PAL class was 3 years ago, and little did I know that I was going to get hooked. After that year, I took two more courses in the PAL courses, and then I became a TA for EDS 130. And then you guys
wanna? I took EDS 138, the charter school course, my sophomore year during winter quarter in order to fulfill the Marshall General Education writing requirement. I initially assumed that, it was something I could just get out of the way, but upon taking the course, and working in the Proy School, and especially getting to work with the kids and know the kids on a one-on-one basis, it definitely became a more humanizing experience. I would say it's definitely a humbling experience, and definitely it definitely made me very aware of the societal inequalities that constantly plague schools across America. And it essentially led me to become an education studies minor as a result. And I would argue it's definitely one of the best courses students here could take at UCSD.
Same as my peers. When I first decided to take this class, I was a freshman in college. And I originally took the class because my parents have this school in Thailand that we were trying to benefit and trying to help. And my dad had asked me to go back as an English teacher. Had no experience working with kids. Didn't even think that I liked them. And then I ended up taking the 131, which was working with a preschool. And like I said, I think that one of the most important parts about that learning experience was that I wasn't just learning about, theories about the best way to teach kids or the way that kids learn, but I was actually able to go into a preschool and work hands-on with these kids, and that just provides a completely different experience. It's so enriching to be able to do that and to have those two components go hand-in-hand. I, like Christina, got hooked. I went to Thailand, worked with these kids, came back and realized I need to keep working with kids. It's one of the best feelings. And that's something that I also got hired as a TA after taking 130, the mentoring class. And one of the overwhelming feedback that I normally get from my students is that this is just one of the best courses that they've ever taken at UCSD. Because like I said, it's so much more of an enriching experience to actually be able to go out and actually work with the issues that you're learning about. And so now I also have a minor in education. I'm looking to go on to graduate school to continue pursuing studies in education.
Okay, and then some general course topics that we go over in each of these classes is we talk about the overview of schools and policies, specific subject areas paying special attention to math and English, inclusion, English language learners, the role of the family and how important it is for them to be involved with the student and the community, learning theories, language, culture, schools and society and how they work together, identity and development of the students, and teaching for and working for social justice.
Aren't these students wonderful? That's why they are pivotal leaders in our program, and it is due to their work that our program is very successful. But I just wanted to close by saying that the social justice education approach is not only part of the Partners at Learning program that we offer, but it is also part of the entire, all of the programs that we offer through education studies, from the education studies minor all the way to the education leadership program, the doctoral programs in leadership and teaching and learning. And a lot of people are somewhat not aware that we are on campus. A lot of the students are surprised that we actually offer teaching credentials and master's degrees, but we are there. And we also have a wonderful MA ASL bilingual English ASL program as well. So again, the social justice idea, it's really a part of all of our courses and all of the programs that we offer. Thank you very much for being such a great audience. We really appreciate it.
I think it's hard to imagine to listen to this presentation and not to be inspired by how our future is going to be so bright when it's going to be in the hands of amazing individuals like Christina, Victor, and Lisa. So please join me and give him another round of applause. And of course, Dr. Chung, thank you so much for the noble work you do every day with these students and many others to foster social justice in our schools and communities around San Diego. So we appreciate that. It now gives me great honor to welcome another alumna to address you, Kelly Kovacek. She is a teacher at the Poise School. You heard a little bit about the Poise School in this presentation. She'll tell you just a bit more about the school and the great work she's doing there. We're extremely proud of Kelly because in 2010 she was named California's Teacher of the Year, and she was one of the four finalists for the National Teacher of the Year Award. I know she doesn't like it when I embarrass her like that, but it makes us very proud as your alumni community. She teaches 11th grade AP United States History and 12th grade AP U.S. Government and a 6th grade advisory class, so she keeps her docket full. When she was a student here at UCSD, she tutored at the Poise School the first year that the school opened, and I think it was then that her inspiration developed for doing the great work that she's doing today. And I hope that all of you here consider tutoring at the Poise School. It's probably one of the most rewarding things that we could all do as community members. So I'd like to welcome Kelly to the podium.
Well, thank you for having me here today. It's always really exciting to come back and speak to a UCSD community, especially being an alumni. And I very much credit the TEP program for why I went into teaching. It certainly was not what I was intending to do when I came here as a freshman, but I absolutely am so glad that I am a teacher at the Preuss School and really able to promote this idea of social justice in our classrooms, because the statistics are quite staggering. Today, over 14 million American children live in poverty. That is more than the populations of Alaska, Delaware, Hawaii, Idaho, Montana, Maine, New Hampshire, North Dakota, Rhode Island, South Dakota, Vermont, and Wyoming combined. This community of at-risk children, now the size of 13 states, is five times the population of our original 13 colonies. We have an obligation to every one of our nation's students. 82% of children whose parents do not have a high school diploma live in poverty. And a child living in poverty has less than a 10% chance of attending college. We have an obligation to every one of our nation's students, and now is the time to act. The personal stories are just as compelling. Juan entered the foster care system at the age of 4, bouncing from one home to another. With low self-esteem and no motivation, he rarely did well in school. By the time he reached his local inner-city high school, Juan was halfway to giving up. The school offered only 2 advanced placement courses, but that didn't matter much to Juan because he was placed in basic reading and math classes. At 16, struggling and frustrated, Juan dropped out of school, along with 20% of his classmates. By 17, Juan was a father and is currently unemployed. Catalina entered the foster care system at the age of 2. A quiet, uncertain young girl, she also moved from home to home. Selected in a lottery, she attended a grade 6 through 12 public school, serving inner city low-income youth where tracking does not exist. She received poor grades her first 2 years, struggling not only with reading and math, but also with a lack of self-confidence and hope. In incremental steps, she slowly improved, with the help of an after-school tutorial session and an advisory teacher that stayed with her for all 7 years. She took 11 AP classes because all students at her school are required to take AP classes. At 17, a confident and prepared Catalina graduated summa cum laude with a full academic scholarship to Wellesley College. Juan and Catalina occasionally see each other. They are brother and sister. But while Juan got lost in an educational system he could not navigate and became another statistic, Catalina attended the school where I teach and was my student for 7 years. Now, technically, miracles do not require this much work by both the students and the teacher. So we won't call Catalina an academic miracle, but rather a story of success that happens each day at our school, where I teach AP U.S. History and Government to over 100 juniors and seniors in room E201, and where I mentor 28 advisory students their entire career on campus. Our school is the Preuss School UCSD, a public middle and high school chartered by the University of California and the San Diego Unified School District. It challenges traditional educational models in its dedication to provide an intensive college prep curriculum for students below the poverty line, who will be the first in their families to graduate from college and often the first to graduate from high school. These students are not handpicked, admission is by lottery, and not based on grades or test scores. Our students represent a rich diversity of cultures, languages, traditions, personalities, and academic skills. My goal and the goal of our school is to help our students break the cycle of poverty, narrow the achievement gap, and fulfill our nation's obligation to provide equal access to a quality education. All too often, society embraces the senseless stereotype that poor and minority students do not have the initiative or the ability to compete academically with their peers from more privileged communities. However, what I have experienced at our school is just the opposite. By offering a rigorous curriculum, setting high standards, and providing unfailing support, we have created a learning environment where all students can and will succeed. Over 96% of last year's senior class and 100% of my advisory class are currently enrolled in four-year universities. Our students represent the full measure of equity in education. In my classroom, I see a thirst for knowledge and an eagerness to excel. It is a passion that may be greatest in communities that need it the most, where the road is most difficult to travel. I found that passion 2 summers ago as a teacher in a dirt floor village classroom in Malawi, Africa, where my students walked miles past broken shacks, AIDS-infected neighbors, and open ditches with malaria-carrying mosquitoes for the chance to be the first in their family to learn to read. And I find that same passion each day in room E201, where my students travel on buses and border trolleys, some an hour or more each way, to learn about the world beyond their neglected neighborhoods. My students call AP U.S. History by its acronym, APUSH, A-P-U-S-H, and that's what they do. They keep pushing. Each time I raise the bar for them, when I ask my students to do more research, analyze a new perspective, write another draft, they find a way to meet the challenge. And I keep pushing them because I know that their tough lives will be so much tougher without the education that I am providing them. Sure, it involves effort on their part, on my part, but our students and our country deserve nothing less. Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis once described state legislatures as laboratories of democracy, where new ideas can be tested to see if they work and to see if they make sense. The same is true with a school like ours, which is able to test new approaches to teaching and learning as we strive to help those not born into privilege and meet the critical needs of our democratic society. But it doesn't take a charter to create innovative solutions to bridge the achievement gap. Rather, it takes an educational system that shares a strong belief in each student's potential and a willingness to support all aspects of that child's education. What I know is that it is what we believe that makes the difference. Teaching in a learning environment that works allows me to see firsthand each day the transcendent power of a true commitment to provide educational equity to the most at-risk students. So this is our call to action. We must push past the old beliefs about what we should expect from our students and ourselves. We must push aside the excuses and speak out for, vote for, accept no less than, enlightened policies and sufficient funding that are first and foremost informed by the belief that every student can learn and that every student deserves our support. This is also our call to action as teachers. We must push ourselves beyond our own comfort zones. We must advocate for the hardest to reach students. We must collaborate with and mentor one another. We are accountable not just to our students and our communities, but to ourselves and to our fellow teaching professionals. We strengthen our profession and our nation by pushing each other to be better. As a nation, as teachers, and as a community, we cannot abandon our students, any students, to the status quo. Too much is at stake. We must make it possible together for qualified teachers to enter classrooms each day, engaging and inspiring their students to grow, learn, and change the world. And now is the time to act. Ultimately, I believe in the future of public education and the power of our profession because of students like Alex. A member of my advisory class for 7 years, Alex was the first in his family to graduate from high school last year. During his sophomore year, his parents lost their home and were forced to move into a homeless shelter. With nowhere to go, Alex attended the daily after-school tutorial session I organized, where I got to know him well during homework sessions. On the eve of graduation, and with a full academic scholarship to Whitman College, Alex handed me a note that said, "I have appreciated all you have done for me. You helped me survive my classes, hundreds of assignments, and many stressful days. You are always there encouraging me to succeed and do better. You lift me up when I am down. You are my guardian angel." My parents wanted me to be a lawyer. I prefer being a public school teacher and someone's guardian angel. Thank you again.
Wow, how could that not move and motivate you? It's just simply amazing. Thank you, Kelly, for sharing the stories with us. To now hear from one of Poi's students, it gives me great pleasure to welcome Miriam Million to the podium in just a few minutes. Just a little bit about Miriam. She is at the top of her class at the Poi School, and she's also the senior class president. She's soon to graduate and start her life. She's a dedicated volunteer at Scripps Memorial Hospital in La Jolla. And her plan is to attend medical school. And I think her dream, as she shared with us, is to participate in Doctors Without Borders. She's going to tell us her story, and I guarantee you it's going to inspire you. Miriam?
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Miriam Million, and I'm a high school senior at the Poi School UCSD. And first off, I just want to say what a pleasure it is to be here with you today to talk a little bit about myself, my school, and my aspirations. Being at Poi, my activities there have been varied. For the past 2 years, I've been the president of our Model United Nations Club, vice president of our Science Bowl team, and a member of the National Honor Society. Also, for the past 2 years, I participated in student government, and as stated, this year I serve as senior class president. I've done everything from written for our school newspaper to participated with the African American Student Alliance on campus. But this great opportunity of an education is fantastic, but it's also worlds away from where I come from. This is where I come from. In 1994, I was born in the capital city of Ethiopia, a country in East Africa, known for its beauty, its cuisine, and its culture. But also, unfortunately, my birth country is synonymous with an image of famine, lack of access to healthcare, and also unjust early child mortality rates. When I was 3 years old, my family migrated to the United States. But truly, my story starts in 1960, when my father fled the country of Ethiopia at 19 years old, fleeing from oppression from communist takeover. For years, he hopscotched across the continent of Africa before making it to the United States. And after struggling for a few years in the US, he took a visit back to Ethiopia, where he met and married my mother. Years after, we came to the United States as a family in hopes that I would have the opportunities of an upbringing in the United States. This is myself and my brother. Since seventh grade, I've attended the Price School, and now my younger brother attends it too. The Price School is truly a family affair, especially considering that my father has been treasurer of the PTA for the past 2 years. The Perth School has absolutely been a blessing for our family. Without the rigor, the college track, and the support from administration and teachers, I wouldn't be on track to be a first-generation college student. The Poise School definitely has so many opportunities, and what I think makes Poise extremely unique from other public schools is that administration, counselors, and faculty do such a wonderful job of advertising these opportunities. One of the most invaluable opportunities I've been given by attending the Poise School is the opportunity to apply for the Bezos Scholars Program. Last year, Mr. Sendez, my high school counselor, nominated me to apply for the Bezos Scholars Program, which is a scholarship to attend the week-long Aspen Ideas Festival in Colorado. And the Aspen Ideas Festival is essentially like the Ideas Symposium. It was a week-long event that served as a mecca for international leaders and acclaimed thinkers to come and talk about world issues and solutions to them. The Bezos Scholars Program afforded me great opportunities. I had the opportunity to have lunch with former Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. I got to have breakfast with the founders of Twitter, the social networking site. And one of the most incredible opportunities that I had was meeting the current U.S. Surgeon General, Regina Benjamin, especially considering that I have the ambition of becoming a surgeon one day. The Poise School has been an integral part in cultivating my ambition to become a surgeon. In seventh grade, I was invited to join the Junior Urban Medical Professionals Program, which was a medical exploratory program where students got to go behind the scenes in hospitals and meet doctors and participate in events. In seventh grade, at 12 years old, I had the opportunity to talk to doctors. And also, at 12 years old, I was able to dissect the fetus of unborn Siamese twins. So that was an incredible opportunity. Another medical-related opportunity I got through the Price School was last year's summer internship through the junior to the Health Information Partners medical internship at the UCSD Medical Center. And through the Price School, I got to apply to this three-week internship where I stayed at dorms on the UCSD campus and every day either traveled to the UCSD Medical Center or the Hillcrest Medical Center and traveled through various departments. In this picture, I'm learning how to suture internal organs during my visit to the robotic surgery department. And on this day, I met with the head of the surgery department and got to talk to him about innovations in surgery. So growing up in a third world country and being in the United States, having the opportunity of this great education has gained the perspective in me that this great opportunity that I've been provided with also serves as a debt that I have to the global community. So essentially what I want to do when I get older is go to medical school, graduate, become a surgeon, and focus on international healthcare, eventually going back to Ethiopia and not only providing healthcare to the citizens there, but also providing health infrastructures that create lasting impacts in the country I was born in. Thank you.
Thank you, Miriam. We'd love to have you come to UCSD Medical School. So as you see, our speakers are all coming up to stage, and this is the opportunity now for all of you to pose your questions to our amazing panelists. And we'll be seated there. Our students are also in the back, and I think I'll join them, and hopefully we'll get to hear from you. And we have microphones in the back, so we'd ask that you stand. We're recording this, so if you could stand and speak into the microphone, that would be appreciated.
I actually strongly agree with the social justice argument in favor of good education. But I'm wondering whether you considered also emphasizing the long-term economic issues. I think if you look at the students and former students on stage, that they will be net economic contributors either through taxes or through public service, one way or another. They will contribute to the world. If a kid leaves school at 16, the risk that he will be a net economic cost possibly going to prison and costing tens of thousands of dollars a year is quite high. And you know, have you considered the merits of perhaps pushing that economic argument?
Dr. Chung, do you want to take that?
Sure. Thank you very much for that question. It's a really important question, and that is a question that we address with our students. And oftentimes, this idea of social justice, like I mentioned in our talk, is very abstract. And for a lot of the students, it seems to be this idea of, well, it's about overthrowing the government, right? That's social justice for a lot of them. It's kind of a scary thought. But when you actually operationalize it and think about what are the concrete outcomes of a social justice approach, you really are benefiting not just those of us who advocate it, but you're benefiting, like you're saying, society in general. Because not only are you preparing individuals for going to be contributing members of society financially, let's say, by having a profession, but you're also going to have individuals who are going to be conscientious and aware of what is it that causes or that perpetuates inequalities in society, and what is it that you can do not only to help yourself move forward economically or financially or socially, but also help others. So that's one of the ultimate goals that we have in our program. It's not so much to just say, you know, social justice, yes, let's stand for social justice, without really understanding what is the concrete outcome. So that's a really good question, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
For the Price School, there's an application that students fill out that allows us to verify their income level and to verify that neither of their parents have graduated from a four-year university. And then they are entered into the lottery, and we select the students that will be attending. So we do a lot of outreach in the community. We target a lot of schools that have student populations that fit this demographic. And have a wonderful coordinator who helps to establish those ties with communities. And then we also have a wonderful group of fifth grade teachers that, and elementary school teachers in general, that really recognize the importance of the program that we're offering at Price, and encourage their students and work with their students to help them apply.
Thank you very much. Please join me in thanking all of our panelists.
Thank you.
As with me, I hope for all of you, this has been provocative and inspiring and moving. And if you're sitting there wondering what you can do, I think you heard it more eloquently from our speakers, that there's a lot we can do as citizens. It could be in terms of service, volunteering your time and your talents. If you have the capacity to support educational causes, social justice causes, please consider that. I know that in this climate of budget cuts, we rely greatly on our friends and on our alumni to support UC San Diego, to support our students, to support the Price School and other programs like it. So please, please find some way that you can help and bring other folks to dialogues like this, to sessions like this that we host at the university and other places in San Diego, so you can continue to grow your mind and become more aware, as Kelly was saying, because it starts with awareness. And as you can tell, we have incredible promise. And they're right here. It's humbling to sit on the stage with these amazing people. So please do your part. The Chancellor's Call for Service is going on during our 50th anniversary year. It's a great platform for you to find an opportunity to serve our communities and be part of solving these issues that we've discussed today. So on behalf of UC San Diego and in recognition of our 50th anniversary, I'd like to thank you. Thank you for being here, and I'd like to thank all of you for joining us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.